Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have the great pleasure today to interview Margaret Ronconi. Margaret has been the poet laureate for Vashon Island, and I bet many of you don't even know that we have, or had, and will soon again have, a poet laureate for our wonderful community where poetry means a lot to many of us. So I wanted to go behind the scenes and find out what a poet laureate does, and also talk about poetry in the community and why it can be so critical. Maybe in these crazy times, poetry has even more importance than it might have when things were a little better. We'll talk about that. So, Margaret, thank you so much. I know you were really busy with the end of your tenure as poet laureate, but I really appreciate you coming in.
Oh, thanks, Sally. It's certainly my pleasure to be here.
Well, first of all, you, as I understand it, you were poet laureate for a year and just recently...
Two years.
Wow. Just left your assignment. I know how much you've been doing because I'm on the email list. So I see these wonderful invitations to open mics and little poetry libraries and things like that. But what does a poet laureate do, and what does the title even mean?
Well, that's a good question. I could answer the first question and say we do everything we'd like to do, or we do nothing except stay in our little room at our desk and write poetry.
I see.
It's an interesting story how the first poet laureate was chosen. Anne Spires, our beloved inaugural poet laureate, was walking down the road up in town, and Ron Irvine drives by and says, "Hey, Anne, want to be poet laureate?" She goes, "Sure, Ron, unless I have to do something." So, as we know, Anne did quite a few beautiful things for our lovely island as poet laureate. And
so let's just give a little context to that, because even though it sounds like a kind of strange encounter, Anne had been producing those amazing highway haikus down by the ferry for years. So she had a presence even if people didn't know about her.
Exactly.
She'd been contributing to the community. And then Ron Irvine had been a big mover in creating our first island-wide poetry fest. Wasn't that right?
I think so, yes.
Or was it a poetry fest? I think it was. I know there were a couple of writers' festivals that he was behind the scenes on, and they were amazing, wonderful contributions that proved how creative this community is, because there were, you know, so many writers and poets who came out for that.
Yes, it was just about, it was like the beginning of gathering all the poets and writers on the island, I think, that first poetry festival.
Yeah. And so when did Anne begin her tenure as poet laureate?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not certain what year that was.
It's more than 10 years ago, isn't it, now?
Yes.
Because there's been maybe at least five of you.
I think I may be the seventh.
Oh, the seventh. Wow.
Yeah.
And does each have a two-year reign?
Yes. Yes. Our reign in the rain is 2 years.
Yeah. So when you said yes, what were you thinking? What sort of hopes and dreams did you have, or ideas for the 2 years that you would be poet laureate?
That's an interesting question, because Anne had asked me previously to this time, and my answer was no, because I was so overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, what would I do? Poet laureate, it's, you know, queenly.
It sounds very fancy.
It's very fancy.
Yeah.
But the second time she asked, I was exuberant. I said yes. And right away, I started lining up things in my mind as to what I wanted to do, and pretty much accomplished most of them.
What was on your list?
Well, first on my list was to have an official open mic. Actually, when I first moved here, there were no poetry open mics. So that was in 2014, I think. So we had some open mics. A couple were actually held at Vashon Winery. Ron was our host, and those were lovely. They were outside, very informal, on a picnic table. I think we had a couple at the bookshop. But anyway, as poet laureate, we kind of started an official open mic at the Coop. Sue Hardy and Chris Anderson were very gracious in letting us use their space.
How big is that space?
It's pretty big.
Is it?
They have concerts there. Local concerts there.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lovely space. And we were there trying to think for how many, at least a couple years. And then Sue Hardy, because she was on the committee at Heritage Museum, she said, "Hey, how about the Heritage Museum as a host?" And I thought, wow, that's wonderful. A little smaller, a little more intimate, and with all those amazing artifacts, surrounding us. So we switched our venue to the Heritage Museum. And one of the first things we did was we had an ekphrastic event, which for those of you that don't know ekphrastic, it's an artist responding to a piece of poetry or a writer responding to a piece of art. So we did that. And it was lovely.
How interesting. How did you select the writers and poets for this? It's not really a collaborative process, but it's where one medium inspires the other and something magical comes out in between.
Yes, it was magical. So I just put out an alert on our email poets list, which has grown to be, I think, almost 90 or 100 poets. And people responded whether or not they wanted to take part in the ekphrastic event. So each poet actually chose their own piece of art. So there were photographs. There were Sandra Noel wrote about this beautiful old rocking horse that's in the museum. So it was very diverse in terms of what was created because of the diversity of the museum.
So you took objects from the museum and they inspired the poetry. That is so cool, because I would imagine that if someone goes into the museum and then hears how a poet would speak to an object, that object will be transformed.
Yes, exactly. And Bruce Hallman had a fabulous idea to, I think he's putting like an audio piece of the poem right by the exhibit, so people can come and visit, see the object, the piece of exhibit, and actually hear the poem that was written.
That's fantastic. Well, I have so many questions, and one of them is, well, first of all, let's just talk about poetry, because you have been supporting poetry in the community. And recently I had some wonderful singers here who are supporting opera in the community. And opera and poetry have something parallel, which is sometimes they're considered to be not of the people, kind of effete, a little bit above it, whether it's intellectual or you have to be really super something to be able to be a poet or to be able to be an art song singer. And yet, how does that stand for you? Do you encounter that people think that poetry has to be sort of set aside, different, super special, only for the greats? Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting question, Sally. I don't see it that way, but I can understand.
Well, tell me how you see it, because I want to give a different model, a different story. Because even I did years ago. I was in a poetry writing group with Myrna Hecht,
Myrna,
which was totally wonderful. But there was this whole gap between loving the process of creating poetry with Myrna. She's so positive. But then in presenting it, that little voice has said, but I'm not a real poet, would immediately come out. And I think a lot of us have that we want to play with words, we want to create poetry. Maybe we've actually done that. But when it comes to presenting a poem, that other voice says, you're not a real poet. Real poets are, fill in the blank.
Yes, I understand this because for years, and to this day, someone will say, oh, you're a poet. And I'll always say the same thing. I'll say, I write poetry, because poet is so grandiose a word. You know, you think of all the greats that we've had previous to our lifetime, and it's a lot to step up to. So to this day, and probably for the rest of my life on this earth, I will say, I'm not a poet. I write poetry.
I want to just interject that I'm talking with Margaret Ronconi, who is a published poet and has several books to her name. Or don't you? Two. Okay. Correction. She has two books to her name. Let's just give people the name of your books, because they're probably sold at the Vashon Bookshop.
They are. So I did an anthology with two other poets, Sandra Noel and Joanna Conham. And the name of that book is Three Birds Dreaming. And my single book of poetry is A Sleeve of Blue.
Great. Thank you for letting me interject that, because I think that we can help each other, because that voice that says, no, I'm not a poet, I just write poetry, I've just published a book of poetry, you know, that voice is so strong. So let's go back in and look at what is it that sort of distances poetry from the people, and how, if you yourself won't say, I'm a poet, who can? I mean, you know.
Well, I've always looked at poetry as a very private thing. Uh-huh. It's not like writing a novel and thinking, okay, this is going to be in every bookshop and I'll be on TV with interviews and all that. That comes with that kind of publicity. Poets as a whole, I think, are very personal, and they're writing about things that perhaps in some way had damaged them or exhilarated them. I mean, it comes from all sorts of emotions, but it comes from a very deep place. And I think sometimes we hold that deep place sacred, so we're a little more reluctant to get the poetry out.
That's so beautiful. I love how you've said that, because it also honors the fact that if you don't want to share your poetry with the world, that's fine. That you've had the experience of pulling something from your depth of soul and maybe being changed a little bit by the writing of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does that happen for you? Is it an experience when you write a poem? Do you go through a process?
It's interesting. It's such an interesting question, Sally, because some of the poems that I've written are sort of write themselves. I almost feel like there's this connection with some great star up in the universe that all of a sudden becomes brighter, and then all of a sudden we're just writing ferociously. But I don't do assignments well. If I were told, okay, you need to write about this, I would really have a lot of angst regarding that, unless it's a piece of art. And then I feel there's some connection with that piece of art that I could bring words to.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the fact that writing poetry is really a soulful process for many can make it a little bit harder to take it out into the world and just, you know, share it freely?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's like we're peeling off skins of ourselves and really showing that inner life that sometimes we're not quite ready to show to the world, or perhaps never show to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I don't know about you, but I am really sensitive to criticism. And it's one thing if I'm writing something that's, say, an essay, and it doesn't have as much of that personal component. But if I'm really drawing from my soul, you know, and then I get this sort of objectified criticism, that would probably make it, I think twice before sharing that, you know, because I don't want somebody to objectify it and just tear it apart when that's not where it came from.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have joined several, actually, over the years, critique groups, but it's not about content as much as it is about, well, you don't need that the or as, or maybe use the word mostly here instead of most, you know, that sort of critique.
Yeah.
But to actually take criticism about the content, that's very difficult.
Yeah. Well, good critique, as you're talking about it, because I'm thinking back to Myrna's group, is an incredible gift. Because
yes.
So often we don't even hear our own words. And to have someone just pause and say, you don't need the, or this word doesn't really fit the tenor of what you're saying, or would you, you know, consider adding a little description so we could feel this a little more, or things like that, actually, I find like they expand us. They give a value to words that we often don't assign.
Yeah. Yes. I also think it's really important, and I've just, in the last couple groups I've been in, we've been doing this, is asking another member of the group to read our poem. And it's so interesting to hear your work read by a different voice.
Brilliant.
So I think that's really important for group. If, you know, if you belong to a critique group, perhaps that could be done.
Oh, I think that's a great idea, because I know in writing, often it's said, you know, read your own work out loud.
Yes.
And then if you go one step beyond that and have someone else reading, so you can have the opportunity to really hear it the way another would say it.
Exactly.
That's really enriching. Yeah. Well, I love this, because what you're making me remember is how good poetry can make you fall in love with words and see the world differently. So can you speak a little to that? Like, what is, how does poetry enliven us or enliven you? What does it give us? That's
The first thing I think about, Sally, is when I'm reading a good novel, I'll see these lines that to me are poetry. And I think in good writing, there's always going to be some sense of overlap. Maybe the writer wouldn't call themselves a poet, but a good writer, someone that's in touch with their soul, if you want to call it soul, will bring that to the writing. So I love that. If I'm reading a good book and the lines to me are so rich, I say to myself, wow, that could be a poem, or that could be a line in the middle of a great poem.
Yes. And then the poems themselves can help us see the world differently, or just see into a very plain reality, you know, a red wheelbarrow or
yes.
a cup of coffee on a table, that suddenly it's like a painting that brings it alive. And what was so ordinary begins to have its own magic, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's something that poets must perhaps be born with, is some vision that it's really unique mm-hmm. to the world, and that when they look at even the most common things,
yeah.
there's some beauty in everything.
Right, right. I love that. Now, there's a different kind. When it comes to an open mic, I know there's a whole type of poetry that's really meant to be spoken. It's spoken word poetry or performance poetry, or however you call it. And not everybody is good at that. And it feels to me like there's some poems that come alive when they're spoken more than others that really invite you to sit there and read the words and sit there with your cup of coffee and drink them in a different way, but not necessarily because they're being projected. How does that affect an open mic? And do you think that's a fair categorization?
I have to say that I've heard over the years so many poems, and I think the largest thing about hosting an open mic is making it easy for anyone to get up there and be in front of people for the very first time. It's sometimes terrifying, as I remember. I'm still a little terrified when I read in my own open mics.
Yeah.
There's a joy that comes to that person's eyes when they're holding that audience with their words. And to me, that is just, it's such a gracious, beautiful thing to see, because it becomes an encouragement for that person. If they're becoming, you know, if they're just starting to write poetry, all of a sudden they're encouraged, like, oh, people really enjoy this. Mm-hmm. So I think getting out there and reading in front of a crowd, and actually our crowds aren't that large and it's a very friendly crowd, is probably one of the best ways to get used to sharing your poetry.
I love that. And so, you know, shout out to these open mics, because it also means that if you are feeling nervous and you want to try out a poem or write a poem so that you can share it, this is probably as safe an environment as you could possibly imagine.
It's very safe. We're a very welcoming, comfortable group.
Yeah. And at the same time, I remember, I think it was Poetry Fest, and I'm sorry that I kind of confuse a little bit between the Writing Fest and the Poetry Fest, but I think this was the Poetry Fest. We had some great younger people of color who were speaking. I think we had an event where we were at the old Red Bike.
Oh, I remember that.
And it was totally a performance. And there were a couple kids from the high school who got up and read. And that was a different, because they really liked performing.
Yes.
They really liked having an audience. And it was also so acknowledging of them, because they were all, you know, they were quirky and a little different and all. And somehow in that environment, we were just enamored. Everybody belonged. Remember how exciting that was?
It was a fabulous crowd, and yes, everybody felt, it seemed like everybody was comfortable. They got up on the stage because the crowd was just so welcoming and so comfortable.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that some people, because I remember a couple of the speakers, they were performance artists.
Yes.
They loved the mic.
Yes.
And they had a special relationship to it. And it's not to say all poetry has to be like that, but I think that the spoken word poetry has sort of brought poetry to people in a different way, you know,
exactly.
Different group of people. So it's not this, you know, kind of pseudo Ivy League, you know, you have to be an older white person to write. No. Poetry can mingle with hip hop, can play on the streets, can come through the mics and all.
Yes, yeah. I think spoken word has definitely extended its hand to the younger poets.
Yeah. There's going to be a movie coming out in November, and I'm already crying thinking about it, although I understand that it's designed to be funny and poignant, but it's about the spoken word poet Andrea Gibson from Colorado.
Oh.
Do you know her?
No, I don't.
She's totally amazing. She was poet laureate for the state of Colorado. Very out in terms of her gender affiliation, and very willing to be raw and vulnerable and putting her life kind of on stage through spoken word. And I think she had a huge following. So when she was diagnosed with cancer, a really horrible terminal cancer, she brought that into her poetry, brought it into her story. And I can't even explain it, but it's sort of like by telling her story through poetry, even practically up to the time of her death, there was something so raw and so life-affirming and also so transformative. I mean, you couldn't hear it. She wrote one letter to her partner, a poem called Love Letter from the Afterlife.
Oh, the title alone.
Yeah, it just sort of goes boom into your gut.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, when I'm gone, I want you to know this. And you can't hear that poem and not be changed on some level. So my feeling, because Andrea was very accessible and raw, when the movie about her last year comes out, I think there's going to be a lot of people who kind of open up and say, poetry could be that? Yeah.
I'm sure it will. Yeah. And what an amazing woman she was.
She was breathtaking. I never heard of her either until a friend of mine read me Love Letter from the Afterlife I think it was 2 weeks before she actually died. And I was just spellbound. And then I went on a binge and started listening to YouTubes and hearing her spoken word poetry and thinking, whoa, she was an amazing force. But a force for good, because poetry can also invite us to see the world a little differently.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I think that's what poetry does, is it kind of opens, well, it opens all our senses.
Right,
to seeing things in a different way.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I started out, you know, I think poetry is not necessarily political, although sometimes I think when you take a stand for the good and the beautiful and the magic in everyday life, I hate to say it, but that's beginning to feel political, you know?
I agree.
From being authentic and real and true to your inner self and all that. How did that ever become political?
Yeah.
But in a sense, it has. And then you, at that poetry fest from some years ago, I remember Sam Hamill read.
Oh, yes. Amazing,
and his
man.
Was decidedly political. He had written poems during the Vietnam War, and he represents a whole side of poetry that speaks out and has a certain kind of force because it directly confronts inequities and disparities and power and war in a way that reaches people in a, you know, like the op-ed may never reach people the way poetry
exactly.
can.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just another way to make people aware, maybe in a softer tone or maybe not in a softer tone, but so much to learn from political poetry.
Right. So if you had like the mic, which actually you do for a few, you know, 30 seconds to say why, or a minute, why do you think we need poetry in this day and age?
Specifically now?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I think what I'm going to say is escape. I think what we're living through right now is almost traumatic to our souls and spirits. And poetry is a balm. And I think we have to kind of lower our heads towards something beautiful, just to escape for a little bit. I mean, it's not going to go away. I mean, this is just the beginning, which I have to keep telling myself. It's not even a year, but this is just the beginning, and we have to find sources in the world of good and beauty. And I think poetry does that for us. It's a balm. It'll soothe us through these times.
I am so with you. I'm so with you on that. Do you think AI can write poetry?
The whole idea of that just sort of turns my stomach green.
Sorry.
I even get upset when I'm writing a text and all of a sudden these words are coming up. It's like, give me a break. I want to write my own thing here. I'm sure it can, you know, but I do not in any way, shape, or form support that idea of AI writing poetry.
Well, it also makes you think... the difference between, can you craft a series of words that represent a poem to most people, you know, and can you generate a soul-defining experience that opens the poet to their heart, to beauty, to the escape you talked about, to sanctuary, and that whole process of writing poetry. It's like in another realm. It can't be mechanized. It's kind of holy ground where we can step away from the mechanical on some level.
I love that you use the word sanctuary.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is. And AI has no soul, no spirit, so.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. Although I think we're all gonna have to be learn to distinguish between that which has soul and comes from the soul and that which is generated mechanically and can sound pretty darn good, but lacks something still.
Yeah.
You know, lacks heart, lacks compassion, lacks awe, you know?
Yeah, the humanness.
The humanness of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you said that now the Poet Laureate is going to be taken over by, it's going to be run by O-Space. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a different way that it gets organized because O-Space is such a wonderful force in our community.
Yes.
It's got a nonprofit, so it can generate, it can run resources that can then feed Poetry Ventures. Tell me what the future of Poet Laureate on Vashon might look like or what you know.
Well, we don't know too much at this point, mm-hmm. other than O-Space and its generosity and its funding and so forth. I believe we'll do a great job of the program, and it could be expanded, you know, beyond what just one Poet Laureate can do. So I'm looking forward to see what happens.
Wouldn't that be great if there was like a little mecca for poetry?
Yes.
Because they also have space there.
They have beautiful space.
Yeah, and maybe that could, you know, be a place where more poetry events of a slightly different kind could happen,
yes,
as well.
Yes, be lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to that. And thanks to O-Space. But now I'm curious, like, who's the next? We have a whole list of 7 distinguished poets on the island who've been poet laureates. And now we're going, okay,
who's the next?
Yeah. Now, I didn't ask you, but do you have anything that you've written that you know by heart that you could share? No.
I can say that years ago, this lovely activist artist, Mimi Ellen, had a happening at the SAM. And what she wanted the poets...
Seattle Art Museum.
Yes, yeah, Seattle Art Museum. She had wanted poets to memorize one poem. And this is so Mimi. We laid down on all the steps and recited our poem. And then we all got on the escalators and repeatedly recited our poem. So you had all these voices coming at you all at once. And I have to say, that's the only time I've memorized one of my poems.
Do you still remember it?
I don't. I remember which poem it was, but I don't.
I've heard that it actually develops your brain in a certain way to memorize a poem.
I'm sure.
That putting something into memorization, and especially something that is beautiful and heartfelt that you want to live with, is a really great way to expand yourself.
Yes. Well, maybe I'll go back there.
But I can imagine, I mean, you and I were talking about the poet David White, and I know that even he does a pretty brilliant job of memorizing his poems, but I've seen him with a little sticky in the poetry book.
Oh, there you go. Even David White.
Yeah. Are you working on another set of poetry right now? Or?
I'm thinking about it. I have a title, and I certainly have enough poems for the past, gosh, it's probably been at least 12 years. Sandra Noel and Joanna and I have been exchanging
Joanna?
Joanna Conum.
Okay.
She's a Seattle poet friend that we've been exchanging a poem a day.
Oh, my goodness.
The three of us have files and files and files of poems. So I'm thinking of another book, thinking about it.
That's so wonderful. And congratulations to do a poem a day. You know, I thought that was only for the William Stafford, great poet of the world, you know, but I write every day, but to do a poem every day. Oh my goodness.
Well, they're not good poems, let me tell you. And a lot of times they'll be haikus, a lot of haikus.
Yes, but that's brilliant. I have treasured the phrase by William Stafford when asked how he could possibly write a poem a day. And apparently he said, I lower my standards. And nobody said he had to write a great poem every day. And
that's a little different.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And if people want to, you know, find out more about the poetry life of the island or come to an open mic, and how can they find out about?
Well, we don't advertise, but I can say that the open mics are once a month, the first Thursday of every month at the Heritage Museum. Sign up to read is at 5:45. Reading begins at 6.
Great. And I think the Beachcomber usually has a listing of
that. And the Beachcomber announces our open mics.
And that would be also a great way to connect with the poetry community on the island.
Yes.
If anybody's interested in furthering their connection. You also did one thing, and I wanted to note that before we close. You created little poetry libraries, didn't you?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was on my little list of what to do as poet laureate. So it was built by a friend of my partner, Mark Goldman, and it's right across the street here at the First Presbyterian Church. And we try to keep it filled with poetry books. It's a lovely little library just for poetry.
How fantastic. And I think I saw in a note that the idea, unlike some little libraries, people are actually supposed to read and bring them back.
Yes.
They're not supposed to disperse into the universe, right?
Yes. We liked the books to come back, so the library continues.
Yeah, but what a beautiful thing to be able to, if you want some heart food, go to the Presbyterian Church, the little poetry library. You can fill up, then bring it back, or bring your own if you have an extra poetry volume.
Exactly. Donations are
accepted. I love that, especially as those of us who have to downsize. You know, it's really hard when you have something that's so precious, but you don't want to trash it. And it's even... You know, even Granny is, it's too valuable. You want it to be shared by people who love it. So
Yes. Now
you know.
Yes.
Plus, the Vashon Bookshop does a really great job of poetry books as well.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Were there any other things you tried to do as poet laureate that we didn't talk about?
That didn't happen?
No, or that you did do, but I don't happen to know about them.
Oh, well, we had forest readings for a while, and we would meet in the forest at a picnic table. Everyone would bring a prompt on a little slice of paper, and we'd throw it in a hat, and then everyone would choose a slice, and we would sit there and write in the forest. It was lovely, till the weather got bad.
I love that. That is totally inspired. It's like a mix of forest bathing and poetry, you know?
Forest bathing, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Anything else that you, anything you wanted to do but didn't quite get to do?
What else did I want? Well, I thought, of course, if I had a budget, I would have loved to have had poetry on the buses, but that requires some, but maybe that's something O-Space can do.
The kind of poetry that is inside or outside?
Inside. For a while, the Seattle buses did that. I always thought that'd be a great thing.
I know. When I took the bus into West Seattle, they were on the bus, but they were also sometimes at the bus stops. They'd have beautiful pictures of poets with some poetry.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that is bringing poetry to the people.
Yes.
You know,
I remember Myrna's portrait. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
It was
right in the middle of West Seattle.
Yes.
Yeah, you
yes.
were like, oh,
fabulous.
I know her. No, that would be a great idea. And I think that would be totally in keeping with poetry for the people. Plus, I don't know whether it was Anne or others. There was a time when they were using there was a little pillar or something down at the farmer's market.
The poetry post.
Poetry post.
That's still nurtured by Anne. Yes.
See, that's brilliant. Those are all ways to connect and make poetry for us all.
Yes.
To give us a chance to stop and really feel what matters and feel what's beautiful. So... thank you so much. I knew this would be a great conversation, and I really appreciate you spending time with me.
Oh, thank you, Sally. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.